Greetings, friends, and welcome to another trip down memory lane as we visit the days of yore when radio was king. I'm your host, Corey Walker, and I invite you to join me around the old radio in the parlor. Today I'm featuring three series never before featured on old parlor radio. First up, though, I need to make a special announcement. The March 29th program will be my last as host of old parlor radio. James Colston of Yarmouth, Maine will take over as host effective April 5th, 2020. I'm finding I no longer have the time to dedicate to producing this program each and every week. More details will follow in the coming weeks. Now on to our show. Our first series is Defense Attorney, which starred Mercedes McCambridge and originally aired from August 31st, 1951 until December 30th, 1952 on ABC. Few episodes remained, but I found one entitled Client Jim Leonard, which first aired at 8 p.m. on Friday, September 14th, 1951. Enjoy.
Listen to Mercedes McCambridge as defense attorney following this important announcement. The United States is engaged in an immense program of defense mobilization. Its success depends upon the maintenance of a strong, a healthy economy. Increased sales of United States defense bonds will ensure that success. Here's a job for America in which everybody can share. In addition to helping your country, you also help yourself, because a bond bought is money saved. You can buy bonds on the payroll savings plan or the bond a month plan. Whichever method you may use, make tomorrow your D-Day. Buy an extra bond for defense.
Ladies and gentlemen, to depend upon your judgment and to fulfill mine own obligation, I submit the facts, fully aware of my responsibility to my client and to you as defense attorney.
The American Broadcasting Company presents Miss Mercedes McCambridge as defense attorney. When Martha Ellis Bryant chose law as a career, she accepted the challenge of defending the defenseless. Jimmy Leonard was one of the defenseless, a 16-year-old newsboy charged with hit-and-run manslaughter. He is being held at the Midtown Precinct, where Martha Ellis Bryant is summoned by Judd Barnes.
I want you to see him, Marty. I want you to talk to him. Lieutenant Leibus will be back any minute. He'll okay the visit.
You're pretty upset about this boy, Judd.
I've known him since he was 2 feet high, and I don't think he's guilty.
Well, the police must have had some reason for bringing him in.
He owns a hot rod. Keeps it in a public garage near the paper. When he went in this morning, the fender and a headlight were smashed up. He took it to a body shop to have it straightened. The police picked him up and nothing flat.
Because of that man who was run down on River Street last night?
Yeah. A couple of people who were waiting near the ferry slip said they saw a hot rod come zooming along and kill him. Jimmy's hot rod isn't the only one in town. Half the kids who peddle our papers have ones just like it.
But not with a smashed fender, is that it?
Somebody might have backed into the car in the garage. Jimmy says he didn't drive it last night, and I believe him.
Why, Judd? Usually you're the doubting Thomas.
Marty, it takes somebody pretty cold-blooded to run a man down and then beat it without stopping to help. And this kid isn't cold-blooded.
Judd, he's just a boy. He might have been frightened.
Not that frightened, Marty. Oh, hi, Ed.
Hello, Lieutenant.
Hi, Judd, Miss Bryant.
Ed, Marty wants to see Jimmy Leonard. How about it?
I guess somebody better see him. He's going to need help.
What do you mean by that, Ed?
I mean he killed a man on River Street last night.
You want to make book on that?
Save your money. I just come from the lab.
His car was in the garage all night.
Not according to the lab report. There's a blood trace on that smash fender that matches the blood of the man who was killed. Not only that, but glass fragments at the scene of the wreck fit perfectly into the broken headlight.
Can there be any doubt about that, Lieutenant?
You've seen enough lab reports, Miss Bryant. Take a look at this one.
The car could have been stolen.
Use your head, Judd. Anybody did steal it and kill the man, they'd have ditched it in some side street. They wouldn't bring it back to the garage.
Lieutenant, has the dead man been identified?
Yeah. Name is Fred Rimling, longshoreman. He just finished a job on the docks and was crossing River Street on his way home when that young punk come barreling along.
That kid isn't a punk, Ed.
Look, Judd, we've been friends for a long time, but I got a job to do this morning. Got to go over to Tenement Row and tell Fred Rimling's wife and two kids he isn't going to come home. It's one of the lousiest things a cop has to do. How'd he expect me to feel about that hot rod jockey you're so fond of?
Lieutenant, maybe you have proof that Jimmy Leonard's hot rod killed Fred Rimling. But you haven't proved that Jimmy Leonard was driving the car.
Maybe not, but I can prove that he lied. He claims he was home all last night. I spoke to his old man a half hour ago. The kid hasn't been home since he left the peddler's papers yesterday. Now, if you still want to see him, go ahead. Better you than his old man.
What do you mean by that?
I mean his father doesn't think as much of him as you do. I let the old man in to see him, he'd beat his brains out. And believe me, I'm tempted. Yeah, I'm sorry I blew, Judd. Thinking about myself, I guess. Got a bad hour ahead of me.
It's my fault as much as yours, Ed. I didn't know about Rimling's family.
I better go. I'll clear your visit with the desk sergeant, Miss Bryant. We'll take you back to the cell whenever you're ready.
Look, Jimmy, Miss Bryant can help you, but she can't do it if you won't talk.
I've told you everything.
You haven't told us where you were last night.
I was home.
Your father says you weren't.
Maybe he didn't hear me come in. He was sleeping. I got up this morning before he did.
I see. Jimmy, how big is the place you live in?
Not big. Kind of small.
How many bedrooms?
One.
Where do you sleep?
Pop and I share the room. We got twin beds.
How about your mother, Jimmy?
She's dead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know that.
No, it's all right.
Jimmy, where were you last night?
Jimmy, I've always been a friend of yours, haven't I?
Sure, Mr. Barnes. You've been swell,
but then why should you lie to me? Where were you last night, son?
No, I can't tell you.
Jimmy, are you refusing to protect yourself, or are you trying to protect somebody else?
No, I can't tell you, that's all. I just can't tell you. So why don't you go away? Why don't you leave me alone?
Come on, Marty. I guess Ed was right.
No, just a minute, Jimmy. Did you ever lend your car to anybody? Was there anybody who might have had a duplicate of the ignition key?
No. I was the only one who ever drove it. I only made it a month ago. A bunch of us made them. We chipped in and bought parts so we could get them wholesale.
Mm-hmm. Did any of the other fellas keep their cars in the same garage?
Yeah. A kid by the name of Rembrandt. I don't know his real name. We call him Rembrandt because he goes to an art school at night. And Frankie Cutter. Yeah, they're the only ones. Say, look at Lady. What can they do to me?
Well, Jimmy, you're just 16. And if they find you guilty, you'll be sent to the state reformatory until you're 21. That's 5 years.
Jimmy, 5 years. Think, son.
Look now, I didn't kill that man. I didn't drive last night. The car was never out of the garage.
All right, so the car wasn't, so the police lab is crazy. But where were you?
Judd, leave him alone, darling. It's no use. Come on, I want to see those other newsboys.
Jimmy's in kind of a jam, huh?
A bad jam, Frankie.
Yeah, I understand. You have a car just like his, Frankie.
Sure, a bunch of us got him. We all made him together.
Uh-huh. Do you keep yours in the same garage?
Got to keep it someplace. What a racket. $8 a month garage rent. I could leave it in the street and save the dough, but the cops keep slapping tickets on it. Hey, you got a butt, Mr. Barnes? I'm out.
Sure, Frankie. Here.
Thanks. Guess I ain't got no matches either.
Here, I've got a lighter.
Ah, that's a good lighter. Look, if my old lady sticks her head in here, grab the weed fast, will you? She screams like an eagle if I smoke in the bedroom.
Frankie, did you happen to see Jimmy Leonard any place last night?
Oh, why? Do you say I did?
No.
To your knowledge, has Jimmy ever gone around with a girl?
A girl? Jimmy, he's too square.
Uh-huh. Is your car in good working order, Frankie?
A dream on wheels. I got a carburetor on that baby. You ought to see it go. I knock off work in the mornings about 4:30 and head for the speedway. A lot of hot rod guys there in the morning, you know? So, there's no traffic and we can race. Hey, nothing can touch that heap of mine.
Do you do that every morning?
Sure, it's kicks.
Did you do that this morning?
No, not this morning. I was too tired, you know, beat.
Hmm. Where was your car last night while you were working? Was it in the garage?
Where else?
Is it there now?
Of course it's there now. Rembrandt's too.
Yeah, we know. We've already spoken to Rembrandt.
Well, thank you very much, Frankie. Judd, we better go.
Sure.
Stick around a few minutes. The old lady went out to get some cake. She'll fix you some coffee or something.
No, thanks, Frankie. Thank your mother for us.
I don't want to get up and see you to the door in my pajamas. I ain't got no bathrobe.
It's all right, Frankie. We'll find our way. Goodbye and thank you.
Sure. Some classy dame you got there, Mr. Barnes. Keep her covered so she shouldn't get cold.
Yeah, I will. So long, Frankie. How do we get out?
I think we came in through that door. This other one must be the kitchen or a closet or something.
Right you are, Princess. Marty, what do you think of Frankie?
I feel sorry for him.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Tenement Row isn't the ideal setting to grow up in. My folks used to live in a place just like this.
You grew up all right.
I was lucky, Marty. I learned how to put words together until they made sentences. Yeah, street level. There's the door.
Ooh, like the end of a dark tunnel. Judson, I know you have to get to work, so I can take a cab to Jimmy Leonard's house, huh?
Yeah, I'm afraid you'll have to, Marty. I'll drop you at a cab stand.
All right.
Still want to see Jimmy's father?
Yeah, I do. And when you get to the paper, will you check around a little, ask some of the other boys if they saw Jimmy last night?
Yeah, sure. Maybe one of the... Hey.
What is it?
Lieutenant Leibus just coming out of that building across the street. Well, there's his car. Hey, Ed! Ed!
Now, he sees you, Judge. He's coming across.
Ah, that must have been where Rimling lived. Leibus said Tenement Row.
Yeah, I know.
Hi.
Hi.
Hope you didn't come down here to see Mrs. Rimling.
No, Marty had to stop in the neighborhood.
How is she, Lieutenant?
A couple of neighbors with her now, and the minister from the church. She'll be all right, I guess, if she isn't left alone. Two cute kids. Look, Judd, I want to ask a favor.
Well, sure, Ed.
Your paper makes a pitch for somebody every once in a while to get help for him. Fred Rimling's family can use some help.
I get right on it, Ed.
No insurance, no nothing. Kill coming from work last night. The first work he'd had in 3 months.
In 3 months? Longshoremen should be busier than that. There's a lot of shipping.
Yeah, well, for some reason he'd been on layoff till yesterday. Longshoremen's union had a meeting yesterday afternoon. He was elected delegate. I guess that helped to get him working again. I better get back to headquarters. Where are you going?
No, I'm going to the paper. Marty's going to see Jimmy's father.
Lieutenant, would you mind doing something for me?
To help that kid up? Well, what do you want?
I want you to check the license plates on Jimmy's car. Then check the registration. Make sure the motor number on the car is right.
What's the reason for that, Marty?
Well, it's just a possibility. Rembrandt and Frankie Cutter have cars exactly like Jimmy's. One of them might have switched parking stalls and license plates. I just want to make sure that Jimmy's car is Jimmy's car.
Look, Miss Bryant, his key fit the damaged car. He drove it out to a repair shop. A fella can always tell his own car, even from others, just like...
No, Lieutenant, but just the same, check it for me, will you? I'll come down to see what you find after I see Jimmy's father.
I told him 100 times if I told him once that car'd get him in trouble. Now look at him. Behind bars.
Well, tomorrow morning he'll be arraigned and transferred to the county jail. And then you'll be able to see him.
I don't want to see him. Not unless I can get my hands on him. I'd like to break his neck.
Mr. Leonard, what kind of father are you?
The kind he should have listened to. I've been too easy with him. He's just like his mother was. Blood'll tell. That's what she'd do, too. Kill a man and run. She never had the guts to face anything.
But he's a 16-year-old boy. He's alone. He's frightened. And he may go to a reformatory if he's found guilty. Does that mean anything to you?
I never should have kept him. She wanted him. I should have let her have him. They're two of a kind.
Oh, who are you talking about? Some girl?
I'm talking about his mother.
Well, isn't your wife dead?
How do I know? I haven't seen her in 10 years. She wanted him, but she couldn't get him. Not when I got finished with that divorce court. I showed him what she was.
You mean you divorced your wife and you got the custody of the boy?
The court found she wasn't a fit mother.
The court found that you were a fit father?
I did everything for him. Tried to make something out of him.
It's almost unbelievable how far justice can miscarry.
What do you mean by that,
Craig? You never wanted that boy.
I took him. and made a home for him.
You took him so that you could do just what you've done, not because you wanted him, but so that you could punish him. So that you could get revenge for whatever you think your wife did to you.
Say, who do you think you are to come in and talk to me like this in my own house? Now get out of here. When you see that son of mine, tell him I hope they keep him in jail forever.
I will, Mr. Leonard, I will. Because compared to the home you've given him, his life there will be paradise.
There's the check on the serial number of the motor, Miss Bryant. It tallies with the number on a registration slip.
Well, then I'm sorry I bothered you, Lieutenant. It was just an off chance.
No, Judd called a few minutes ago. He's on his way over to meet you.
Thank you. Has Jimmy Leonard said anything since I left?
No, he's still clammed up. You know, that fool kid. If he hadn't run away, the charge wouldn't be so bad. A year, maybe, but that hit and run. What happens to a kid's brain, Miss Bryant? It's an accident, not murder. He was speeding, sure, but why didn't he stay to face it?
I guess he was afraid to face something else. His father.
Yeah, you think he hated the kid. You know the kid's guilty, don't you, Miss
Bryant? Don't ask me that, Lieutenant. My job is to defend him.
Yeah, sure, I'm sorry. I got some work to do, but you can wait here for Judd, okay?
Yeah, fine.
Oh, sorry, Ed.
Well, speak of the devil. Here's your bow now, Miss Bryant.
Got time to grab a bite with us, Ed?
Cops never eat or sleep. You know that, see you.
Any luck, Marty?
Yeah, all bad.
I've got some bad news, too. Jimmy was definitely lying about where he spent the night.
Why, do you know where he was?
At the Hotel Savarin Plaza.
The Savarin Plaza?
Yeah, there's a newsstand in the lobby. One of the men on a delivery route was making a drop there, and he saw him.
We might have been just walking through. That hotel opens on two streets.
Uh-uh. Delivery men saw he said Jimmy at the desk registering. Said he called to him, but Jimmy turned his face away. He said he thought maybe he'd made a mistake.
Did you check with the desk clerk?
Yeah. Jimmy was registered, all right. Not only that, but he'd been there before. For some reason or other, he stayed at that hotel about one night a month.
Gee, it's strange, a boy like him in a hotel like that.
Yeah, and there's something even stranger. He'd always call in advance and make a reservation. Marty, you think he was meeting somebody or something?
Yeah, I do, and I think I know who. His mother, Chuck.
His mother's dead. You heard him tell us that.
If she's dead, Jimmy's father doesn't know about it. They were divorced 10 years ago. Oh, Judd, that boy's not guilty. He's hiding something.
Well, he won't talk, Marty. You saw that.
Maybe we can find something to make him talk. You go back to that hotel and go through that register. See if a woman has also registered there on the same days that Jimmy did. Get all the information you can on her. Because if we find her, I think we'll find Jimmy's mother.
You may have something, Marty. Why don't you come with me?
Nope. Got another stop to make.
Yeah, where?
Down at the docks. I'd like to know why Fred Rimling only got one day's work in 3 months.
Hey, you sister.
Yes?
Down these docks ain't no place for a lady. Hoists and everything, you might get hurt.
Thank you very much. I'll be careful.
Hey, wait a minute. Don't go. I ain't finished talking yet.
You let go of my arm.
You've been nosing around the docks all afternoon asking the longshoremen questions. You shouldn't do that. These guys got to work.
I don't think what I do is any of your business.
It's all my business. I'm Joe Boston. You're wasting their time and they all work for me.
Oh, I see. You're Joe Boston.
Yeah. Heard of me, eh?
Yeah, this afternoon I've heard quite a lot about you. Fred Rimling worked for you, too, didn't he?
Yeah. Poor Fred. I just sent some flowers. Bad thing. Poor guy getting killed like that. Leaving a family. I bleed for him.
Bleed what? Ice water?
Look, you're a pretty fresh dame. What do you want around here?
I want to find out why Fred Rimling worked only one day in 3 months.
Docks are slow, that's why.
They're loaded with shipping. I've been talking to the men. And I know why he didn't work.
Oh, all right, sister. Tell me.
He didn't work because you have the contracts for all the unloading done here, and you make the men kick back part of their pay.
Yeah? Get one of them to say that in front of me.
Oh, you know they're frightened of you. But Rimling wasn't, was he? He was ready to fight you. That's why the men elected him delegate yesterday.
He was a communist. Always making trouble.
He was not a communist. He went to church regularly, and all the men around here respected him. One day's work in 3 months. And a late job, too. One that brought him out on River Street at 3 o'clock in the morning to be killed under the wheels of a car.
A hot rod driven by a crazy kid. You blaming me for that?
No, I'm not blaming you yet. You let go of my arm.
Sure, I'll let go of it. But let me tell you something. Stay away from these docks. Stay out of my business or I'm going
to... More of what, Buster? What's the matter, Marty?
Judd, he's...
You're Barnes, ain't you? Newspaper guy, eh?
That's right. And Miss Bryant happens to be the girl I'm going to marry, and I don't like to see her having trouble. Come on, Marty, I'll take you home.
Okay. I'm pretty happy you came along.
I looked for you all over the docks. Lucky I found you.
Yeah. Rimling was breaking up a racket on him, Judd. Boston looks like a man who wouldn't stop at any murder.
Are you sure?
He shakes the men down, a pay kickback. A couple of them hinted at it, but they're afraid.
Ed Liebus suspected Boston of strong-arm stuff before, up to and including murder, but he's never been able to hang it on him. But, Marty, what's the connection between Joe Boston and Jimmy's hot rod?
I don't know. I keep thinking Jimmy's car was switched with another one just like it. But Liebus has proven that's wrong.
Yeah. Over there is where Rimling was killed, Marty. Coming out of Pier 37. Witnesses who saw the hot rod were in that ferry shed there. The car came speeding along from that direction.
Yeah. Well, hey, Judd, what did you find out at the hotel?
Oh, yeah. The kid's mother was at the hotel on those nights, all right. Her name's Mrs. Helen Goodrich now, remarried. Comes from Pleasanton, 100 miles upstate. I called her, told her what's happened. She broke up, Marty. She's on her way here now.
Oh, good. That boy sure needs her.
She loves him, Marty. I can tell by her reaction.
Judd, look out. Watch.
What? Wow. Oh, that crazy cab driver. He almost skidded right into us.
It wasn't his fault. It's this road. It's like glass.
An oil truck overturned here a few days ago. I tried to sand it down, but it's still slippery. You hear the sand and gravel kicking up under the fenders?
Yeah, I do hear it. Judd, I want to see Lieutenant Liebus. I want to see him right away.
Well, why? What are you so excited
about?
The
car that killed Rimling must have driven through that oil slick.
Yeah?
I got an idea. An idea that may prove Jimmy didn't kill Fred Rimling.
Now, wait a minute, Miss Bryant. Wait a minute. Give me that again. Slow.
Lieutenant,
huh?
The car that killed Rimling must have passed that oily spot on River Street, right?
Yeah, so?
Suppose it was not Jimmy's car.
I got a short answer for you, Miss Bryant. If it wasn't Jimmy's car, Jimmy's car wouldn't have a smash fender and headlight.
There are two other cars like it in the same garage. The night man admitted he was asleep. Any one of those cars could have gone in and out without his ever seeing them.
Okay, what's your point?
Her point is that Rimling might have been killed by one of the other hot rods. How did you happen to pick Jimmy up, Ed?
You know how. Judd, we put out a bulletin to all repair shops to report a damaged hot rod.
And you got a call on a car with a smashed fender and headlight.
Yeah, and it's good, solid evidence.
But would it still be solid if you could prove that an undamaged fender and headlight were removed from Jimmy's car? Right in that garage? And the damaged ones put on in their place?
Ed, it could happen.
Yeah. I never thought of it, but you're right, it could. Yeah, but how can we prove it?
Your lab can, by that oil slick. The death car came through it, and that oily sand hits up under the fenders and some of it sticks.
It did on my car, Ed. I checked to see.
That's proof, Lieutenant. You have the lab go over Jimmy's car again. If he did drive through there, there'll be traces of oily sand under all four fenders. But if you only find it under the damaged fender, then that fender does not belong on Jimmy's car.
Miss Bryant, if I ever kill anybody, you've got a client. Hello, Liebus. Call the lab. Tell him I want a crew at the police garage right away.
Ed, better send somebody to look at those other cars, too. The ones belonging to Rembrandt and Frankie Cutter. If one of them made the switch, he'll have oil and sand under three fenders.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
I'll bet on Frankie Cutter's car. Frankie told us he used to go racing every morning. But he admitted that he didn't the morning after Rimling was killed.
Sure. He missed the races because changing that fender and headlight took time.
Uh-huh. Where's he live yet?
Let's see. Oh, it's almost 9 p.m. He should be at the newsstand by now, 5th and Madison.
All right. Hello, give me radio division. Radio, Lieutenant Liebus. Put out a pickup for a kid named Frankie Cutter. He's a nosy. 5th and Madison. Have him brought in here, and hell till I get back.
I didn't kill him, I tell you. I was working the newsstand.
Save it, Frankie. You're cooked. The lab crew can prove that you switched fenders on Jimmy's car.
Might as well tell the truth.
Come on, Frankie.
Give me a butt, will you? I'm out.
You can smoke later.
Okay. I changed the fenders and the light. But I didn't kill nobody. I was at the stand. Somebody else had the car.
Oh.
If I tell you, he'll kill me. He's a big shot, the stuff, real big, got connections.
Maybe we can tell you, Frankie. It was Joe Boston, wasn't it?
Huh? How'd you know?
Was it Boston, Frankie? Come on, talk.
Yeah, he came by the stand that night. I had my car in the alley, by the movie, you know? Every time he picked up a paper, Boston, I mean, he slipped me a buck. A big guy, you know? So it's about 2 a.m. when he comes by. He wants to know, can he borrow my car? To a guy like him, you don't say no, so I give him the keys.
And when did he come back?
About 3:30. Tells me he had an accident. The thing is smashed up. The fender and the headlight. Give me a butt, will you, somebody?
Here.
He gave me a C-note to keep my trap shut. I didn't know what happened. When I took the car into the garage, the night guy was asleep. So I glommed onto a fender and a light from Jimmy's car. Next morning, when I found out a guy we had killed, I was scared stiff. I couldn't say nothing. Boston would lay me out.
Enough, Lieutenant?
Plenty. Radio division. Radio, Libus again. Another pickup. Joe Boston on a 224. No, I'm not kidding. This time he rides. Come on, Frankie.
Where are you taking me? I didn't do nothing.
You're a material witness. I want to keep you alive until Joe Boston isn't. You're lucky we picked you up.
He's right, Frankie. Boston knew we were asking questions about him. When he picked up his paper tonight, your tip might have been more than a dollar. He'd shut you up for good.
When they bring him in, you ain't going to put him in the same cell with me, are you?
No, but I ought to just for kicks. Come on, move. While I'm putting this one in, I'll let Jimmy lend it out.
We'll wait.
Marty, thanks. You saved a good kid.
Jimmy'd have to be good. If he weren't, he'd have gotten into trouble a long time ago with that father of his. That man is a real...
Is Lieutenant Liebes here or Mr. Barnes? I've got to see one of them right away, please.
I'm Mr. Barnes. You must be Jimmy Leonard's mother.
Yes. Yes, where is he? Let me see him, please.
It's all right, Mrs.
Goodrich.
Mrs. Goodrich, Jimmy will be here now in just a minute. He's being released.
Released? Mm-hmm. Released? You mean he's all right? They know he didn't do anything?
Yes, yes, they know.
Oh, thank heaven, thank heaven.
Mrs. Goodrich, he wouldn't tell them where he'd been that night. Do you know why?
Because of me. My husband. Not Jimmy's father, Mr. Goodrich. He doesn't know I've been married before. I never expected to see Jimmy again after his father divorced me, so I never told Mr. Goodrich.
I see.
Since the divorce, I didn't see Jimmy again until last year. I came to do some shopping. So I'm selling papers and recognized him. A mother knows. I had to see him after that. We met once a month.
Take it easy, Mrs. Goodrich.
I was afraid to tell my new husband. Afraid I might lose him if I told him now, so late. I guess that's why Jimmy wouldn't say where he was. He knew I was happy. He didn't want to bring me into it.
But you'll have to tell your husband now.
I did. Right after Mr. Barnes called. I don't know now why I was afraid to tell him before. I got a good man this time. He's out there in the car. He wants me to bring my boy home with us. But I can't. He's still a minor. The courts gave his father custody.
Mrs. Goodrich, you take the boy along with you. You leave the rest to me. I'll get that decision reversed if I have to spend my life in a courtroom.
Oh, thank you. I don't... Jimmy! My baby!
Mom!
Jimmy.
Mom!
Come on, Jeff.
You know, Marty, you worry me.
Why?
Well, there's nothing a man dreads more than the prospect of being married to a woman smarter than he is.
Don't worry about it, Doc.
No? Why not?
Because if I'm really smarter than you are, I'll be smart enough to never let you know it.
Oh. All right, that's a deal. Now give me a kiss.
I don't want to.
Come on.
Well.
Well.
I've just heard Defense Attorney starring Mercedes McCambridge with Howard Culver as Judd. Tonight you heard Tony Barrett as Lieutenant Liebes, Tom McKee as Boston, Joel Nestler as Jimmy,
George Peroni as Frankie, and Irene Tedrow as the mother. Music was composed and conducted by Rex Corey. Defense Attorney was written by Joel Murcutt. The program is directed by Dwight Hauser. Next week, another exciting adventure with Mercedes McCambridge, Defense Attorney. Be sure to listen. This is your FBI. The official broadcast from the files of the FBI follows immediately. Stay tuned. This program came to you from Hollywood. America is sold on ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.
I hope you enjoyed that great program. You just heard client Jim Leonard from the short-lived series Defense Attorney. The episode was first heard on Friday, September 14, 1951 on ABC. Next up, the juvenile series, The Adventures of Champion, starring Gene Autry's famous horse and a boy named Ricky West. The series aired in 1949 on Mutual and consisted of 15-minute episodes. Only three episodes are extant. Today I'm playing Mystery, The Rustler's Hideout, which first aired on August 5th, 1949.
A herd of wild horses blazing the way across the plains of the west. The sound of 1,000 stampeding hooves. And leading them all is the king of them all. Gene Autry's champion, the world's wonder horse. Yes, boys and girls, the Mutual Broadcasting System presents once again the transcribed adventures of the king of all wild horses, Champion, the world's wonder horse. A series of fast, exciting stories about a boy named Ricky West, raised in the wilderness since childhood by his adopted Uncle Smokey, a German shepherd dog named Rebel, and a stocking-legged chestnut stallion you all know and love, Champion, the world's wonder horse.
Right now, though, boys and girls, here's your old Uncle Smokey to tell you the last episode of this week's exciting story, The Mystery of the Rustler's Hangout.
Well, howdy there, boys and girls. Yes, sir, like Mr. Rusted just said, this here's your old Uncle Smokey. And doggone it, I'll bet you can hardly wait to find out what's happened to Ricky, Rebel, Champion, and me since yesterday. Well, I'm not going to keep you guessing any longer. No, sir. Now, let's see. You remember yesterday how a couple of cattle-rustling varmints by the names of Fingers and Flint had been trying to kill Ricky and me on account of we knowed they was cattle-rustlers. And you remember how me and Ricky and Champion and Rebel had been hiding in a pretty little valley where there was a big waterfall at one end. And how one morning we seen a whole lot of cattle being driven into the valley. Well, doggone if it weren't them very same rustlers. Yes, sir, we'd been hiding right smack dab in the rustler's hideout. Anyway, kids, them no-good hombres grabbed Ricky and me and throwed us right out into the middle of that big whirlpool. A whirlpool where anything that was thrown in went down and never come back up.
Well, Flint, looks like that's the end of them two. They won't be sticking their noses into our business again. Not ever.
Well, sure, kids. As Fingers said, it sure looked like Ricky and me was goners, all right. And we knowed it, too. Because there wasn't no way to get out of that there whirlpool. No way at all.
It's pulling up my legs, Uncle Smokey. We're going to be drawn into the center. I can't keep my head above water much longer.
Me neither, son. Current's awful strong. Getting stronger the nearer we get to the middle.
I wish I could see Champ.
Me too.
I'm going under, Uncle Smokey. I'm going under.
Can you hold your breath as long as you can, Ricky?
Goodbye, Uncle Smokey.
Yep, kids, that was it. Me and Ricky was pulled right down in the middle of that whirlpool. Of course, I held my breath just as long as I could, all the time feeling myself being pulled deeper and deeper. And my lungs started to ache. And I knowed I'd just have to take a big breath, even if it was water instead of air. So I said a little prayer, and I opened my mouth, and then I felt myself starting to go up again. Up, up, up. Up I went, faster and faster. And then all of a sudden, my head popped out above water, and I could breathe good, clean air again. And there, right alongside of me, was Ricky.
Gosh, Uncle Smokey, I thought you were never going to come up.
Ricky, where are we?
I don't know. It's kind of dark in here. I think we must be back in the falls.
Yeah, I guess it must be. Because there's the falls over there. You can see the light coming through the water.
We're not out of danger yet, Uncle Smokey. Still about 50 feet to the edge of the pool. I don't think I can make it.
Me neither. Hey, that sounds like Rebel.
That's Champion, Uncle Smokey. Champ! Here we are, boy! Out here in the water! Here he comes, Uncle Smokey. Champ's coming out to help us. If we can just hold out a few seconds longer.
Try, Ricky. Try.
Over here, Champ! Over here, boy! That's it, Champ! Good boy! Grab his mane, Uncle Smokey. I'll grab it on this thing.
Got it, Ricky! Got it!
Now swim for sure, Champ! Swim!
Well, sure, boys and girls, by holding on to Champion, Ricky and I was able to get to the bank of the pool. A sort of a ledge it was. And then we pulled ourselves out of the water and just lay there, too tired to move.
I still can't figure out how we got here, Uncle Spooky. How'd we get out of the whirlpool?
I think maybe I can figure it out, son. You see all them old sticks and stuff down there in the water?
Well,
you remember when Fingers was showing us his big disappearing act, where he throwed the stick into the whirlpool and it never come back up?
Yeah.
Well, son, the reason that stick didn't come back up was because it come up back here, back of the falls. Them rustlers thought it stayed down there in the bottom of the pool. Just like they must think we did, too. But we didn't.
Well, I'll be.
I'm afraid they're going to get a mighty big surprise when we turn up again alive and kicking.
But Uncle Smokey, what I can't understand is how Rebel and Champion got back here.
Son, that's something we're going to have to find out. That is, if we ever get out of here without having to swim back through the whirlpool.
Say, I got an idea, Uncle Smokey. I'm going to try and get Rebel to show me how he got in. Come here, Rebel. Here, boy. How'd you get in here, boy? Show me how you got in.
He's running off the left, Ricky.
I'm going to follow him, Uncle Smokey.
Well, go to it, son. I'll wait here. I'm still a little tired from that swim.
Okay, I'll be back in a minute. That way, Rebel? Is that the way you came in? Along this ledge, boy? Gee, Willikins, it's a nice wide ledge, and it leads right over... Now I see it, boy. There's a regular path that leads around the falls and outside. So that's how you got here.
Fine, simple, son.
There's a big wide path here, Uncle Smokey. Wide enough to drive a team of horses. We can get out anytime we want.
Gone, Flint. I've been under that water for a good 5 minutes.
Yep. Hey, nobody can live underwater for that long.
Yeah, that'll teach them to stick their noses in our business.
Yeah, Finger, so will. Well, what say we start driving this herd toward the water? Because I sure got ways of spending the money we're going to get when we sell these cows.
We ain't going to the border, Flint, at least not yet. Huh? We ain't going to stay here, neither. All right, now look, use your head. Now that the kid and the old man are dead, there ain't nobody to prove we're the rustlers, is there?
No, but...
So we got more time, a whole lot more time. Time enough to pick us up a few more head. And this time a real herd to drive over the border.
Yeah.
Come on, let's get going.
Hey, wait a minute. Now, what about these steers we've already got here in the valley?
There's feed here, ain't there?
Yeah.
And there's plenty of water.
Yeah, sure.
And ain't nobody here to drive them away, is there?
No.
So they'll stay here, Flint, every last one of them. They'll all be here right in this valley when we get back.
Uncle Smokey.
Yes, Ricky?
The rustlers are gone, haven't they?
For a while they have, I reckon. Why?
Well, let's do a big disappearing act of our own.
I don't get you, son.
Well, this cave is awful big, isn't it?
Yeah, sure.
Big enough to hold all of those stolen steers, isn't it?
I'd say it's big enough to hold all them and about 500 more.
Then why don't we make those cattle disappear?
You're still talking in riddles, boy.
Look, I'll take Champ and Ribble, and you'll go out there in the valley and drive those cattle back here, over the trail and into this cave, back of the falls. Well, then when the rustlers come back, the cattle will be gone, and they won't know what happened to them.
Well, I'll be...
Looks like that does it, Uncle Smokey. We've got them all back here in the cave.
Yeah, sure have, son. That's just about the biggest disappearing act we've ever pulled. Yes, sir, 100 head of cattle disappearing right off the face of the earth.
Those rustlers are sure going to be mighty surprised when they get back here to the valley.
Surprise is just a small word for it, boy. Just a small word.
And now, Uncle Smokey, Champ and I are going to ride into town and bring back the sheriff.
That's a good idea. I'll come along with you.
No, I think you better stay here. The sheriff might still think that you're the rustler.
Yep, you're right. I never thought of that.
Besides, somebody's got to keep the cattle here in the cave.
Well, you just leave that to me and Rebel. But be careful, son. Be careful.
Don't worry, Uncle Smokey. We'll be back in not more than 4 or 5 hours.
Well, kids, Ricky and Champ went off with the sheriff. In the meantime, Rebel and me settled down to wait until they got back. Well, sir, 4 hours went by, then 5 hours, then 6, and I begun to get a mite worried. And then I heard something that made me go to the edge of the falls and take a look out into the valley. And do you know what it was? It was them two rustlers, Fingers and Flint, coming back. And they was driving about 50 more head of cattle.
Well, Flint, here we are. Now all we got to do is add these cows to the 100 head we already got and take out for the border.
Yeah, just think, Fingers, 150 head. That'll sure bring a pretty piece of change.
We'll be rich, Flint, rich.
Yes, sir, we shall. Hey, Fingers.
Huh? What's the matter?
Where's the rest of them steers?
Why, they're right here. Hey, where are they?
There ain't another single steer in the whole blame valley.
Well, maybe they strayed off. Maybe
hey,
they...
Hey, Fingers, look.
What? Where?
Down there on the ground. Cattle hoof marks.
Well, I'll be. Look, they're headed straight for that there waterfall.
Well, boys and girls, that was something Ricky and me hadn't figured on. Anyway, they followed the cattle hoof marks, all right. And they was heading straight for the trail that led behind the falls. I figured in about 2 shakes of a lamb's tail, they'd find the opening, and me. Well, I guess a feller's luck can't hold out forever. And then I seen him, Ricky on Champion, leading the sheriff and the whole posse down into the valley. So right then and there, I made up my mind. I rushed out of the cave and met them rustlers face to face. And man, oh man, was they surprised.
What? Hey, Fingers, it's Grandpa.
What? It can't be. He's dead.
Oh, no, I'm not.
Shoot him down, Flint. Shoot him down.
I'd advise you to look behind before you shoot, gents.
Hey, Fingers, Mark, it's the sheriff and the kid. And run, Fingers, run.
You only got one way to run. And that's right into that there whirlpool.
Good work, Ricky. Howdy, Uncle Smokey.
Howdy, Sheriff. I reckon you don't want me anymore, do you?
You never did want you, really, Uncle Smokey. You ought to know that.
Well, with these cattle here in the valley and the 100 head Uncle Smokey and I have hid away in the cave, you have all the proof you need, Sheriff.
You bet I will, Ricky. You bet I will.
Hey, what's the matter, Champ? Oh, I know. You want to go back to your herd of wild horses, don't you? Okay, boy, you earned a vacation. Here, I'll get off you. There. Go ahead, fella. I'll be seeing you, Kim. I'll be seeing you.
Well, boys and girls, it looks like that's just about all for this week. But be sure and be listening next Monday for another real exciting adventure called The Mystery of the Vanishing Cattle. Well, till then, this is your old Uncle Smokey saying so long, kids, and keep punching.
sure and listen in Monday, same time, same station, to learn more about Ricky Rebel and the King of the Wild Horses. Gene Autry's champion, the world's wonder horse. This transcribed program was produced by Gene Autry Productions, directed by William N. Birch, and came to you from Hollywood. And now stay tuned for Curly Bradley, which follows over most of these stations in just a moment. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
Well, I hope you could keep up with that fast-paced adventure story. You're listening to The Adventures of Champion. The episode was titled Mystery of the Rustler's Hideout and first aired on Mutual on August 5th, 1949. Finally, something unique. Gildersleeve's Stories for Children was not an actual radio series, but a series of recordings Harold Perry, who played Gildersleeve, recorded with Capitol Records for Children on 78 RPM Records. Today I'm playing the story of Hansel and Gretel from 1946. Enjoy.
Did you ever hear the story of Hansel and Gretel? Well, this is it. Hansel was a little boy and Gretel was a sister. And they lived with their father and stepmother in a tiny cottage near a wood. The father made his living cutting firewood for people. And the stepmother, well, she spent her time doing housework and complaining and being mean to Hansel and Gretel. There wasn't much money in the wood business. And when one year nothing came up in the family garden but radishes, and the chickens got so hungry they quit laying eggs, there just wasn't enough food to keep the family going. So one night, the woodcutter's wife came to bed in her curl papers and said to her husband, "Listen, dear, there isn't enough food for us and those two children of yours. Take them out to the woods tomorrow and lose them, or we'll all starve to death." "No, honey, that's no way to talk," the woodcutter said. You see, he loved his children. But his wife was one of those women that just won't give up an idea, and she nagged away at him till he finally gave up. The next day, he took Hansel and Gretel way, way into the forest, miles from home, and sneaked away and left them there to starve. He felt pretty bad about it, but he did it. But fortunately, the scheme didn't work. Hansel was a pretty smart little boy, and he'd overheard his father and stepmother talking. So he'd filled his pockets with white pebbles and dropped them along the way into the woods. When the moon came out, the pebbles sparkled so brightly, the children were able to find their way home with no trouble at all. The father was overjoyed to see them, but the stepmother wouldn't give up. The next night, she nagged and whined at her husband again. "It's them or me, dear," she kept saying, and the poor woodcutter finally agreed, just so he could get some sleep. When Hansel overheard this and tried to creep out and get some more pebbles, he found his stepmother had locked the door. So when they started off the next day, he had nothing to leave along the way but some crumbs of bread she had given him for lunch, thinking, of course, it would be his last. And sure enough, Hansel's breadcrumbs didn't work out so well. When the moon came out and the children began to look for the path, they discovered some birds had eaten all the crumbs. So there they were, no path to take them home. Just big black trees with owls sitting around in them, hooting in the moonlight. Gretel began to cry. "Oh, Hansel," she said, "we'll never find our way home. We're lost in the woods. The wild animals will eat us." "Now, Gretel, buck up," said Hansel. "You're a big girl. The thing to do is to go to sleep under some leaves, and in the morning everything will be all right." So Gretel dried her eyes and got busy helping to fix a nice bed of leaves. And before you could say eftsoons, the two children were fast asleep. When Hansel and Gretel woke up, the sun was shining, and the world looked a great deal brighter than it had the night before. So after a breakfast of roots and berries, they started off quite cheerfully, looking for a path that would take them back home. They walked and walked, but nothing seemed to lead anywhere. And finally, late in the afternoon, they found themselves right back where they'd started, with their bed of leaves still lying there under the tree. Discouraging, wasn't it? You see, this was before the days of Boy Scouts or Campfire Girls, so Hansel and Gretel didn't know how to tell directions by the sun. And they spent the next 2 days wandering around in the wood,
getting nowhere at all. And all the time they were getting hungrier and hungrier, since they had nothing to eat but roots and berries. Maybe you've heard about how easy it is to live on roots and berries if you're lost in the woods. Well, don't you believe it. On the morning of the third day, Hansel and Gretel were sitting under a tree, wondering what to do next, when suddenly a beautiful white bird lit on a branch above their heads and began to sing. And as the white bird sang, the children began to feel better. They didn't feel tired or discouraged or even hungry anymore. When the bird finished his song, he circled above them for a moment and then flew slowly away, almost as if he were telling them to follow. And they did. They followed till they came to an open space, very sunny and cheerful, with a little cottage standing right in the middle of it. The white bird lit on the roof and the children went up closer. "Hansel," said Gretel, "do you see what I see? The whole house is made of cake." "Careful," said Hansel, "this may be a trap." But he broke off a little piece of the roof and popped it into his mouth. "Mmm, delicious," he said, with his mouth full. "The best roof I ever ate in my life. Have some." But Gretel preferred to knock out a piece of one of the window panes, which were clear sugar. They were munching away, making up for 3 days of roots and berries, when the cottage door opened, and out came an old, old lady. Hansel and Gretel were so frightened they almost dropped what they were eating. But the old lady smiled and said,
"Ah, you dear children, what has brought you here? Come in and stay with me, and no harm shall befall you."
And she led them inside and gave them a wonderful supper. Pancakes and syrup and nuts and apples and 2 glasses of milk apiece. Then she showed them a room at the back of the house with 2 little white beds in it, all made up. Well, camping is all right, but a bed is better than a pile of leaves any day. And in a few minutes, Hansel and Gretel fell asleep, never dreaming that the kind old lady was really a terrible witch who loved to eat little boys and girls. Now, of course, we don't have witches anymore these days. For all I know, they didn't have any in those days either. But they claim they did, and they claim they were terrible. I imagine this witch had got hold of Hansel and Gretel was just like all the others. Witches have red eyes, and they can't see very far, but they have long, sharp noses, and they can smell a little boy they'd like to eat long before they can see him. This particular old witch had built the house of cake on purpose to attract little children, so she could catch them and eat them. And early the next morning, she tiptoed into their room while they were still asleep, and grabbed Hansel and dragged him out to a little wooden cage she had in the backyard and locked him up. Then she went back and yanked poor Gretel out of bed.
"Get up, you lazy thing. There's cooking to be done. I'm going to fatten up your brother for a few days and then eat him."
Well, there was nothing Gretel could do but obey orders. So from that day on, she was fetching water from the well, sweeping, washing dishes, shelling peas, and getting nothing to eat but leftovers, while Hansel was kept locked up in his cage with nothing to do but eat, and plenty of that. Every morning the witch would come out in the yard and say to Hansel,
"Stretch out your finger, son, so's I can feel if you're getting fat."
But Hansel, I told you he was smart, didn't I? Hansel was in no hurry to be eaten up by the old witch, so he searched around the cage and found an old chicken bone left there by some unlucky little boy who'd been there before. And he stretched out the chicken bone instead of his finger. The witch, who was nearsighted, remember, felt the chicken bone every morning, and she couldn't understand why Hansel didn't seem to be fattening up. And after about a month, she couldn't stand it any longer.
"Fat or lean, I'm going to eat that boy for supper tonight," she said.
And she sent Gretel for a bucket of water to boil her brother in. Poor Gretel. She cried and cried, but the witch only screamed at her to stop the noise.
"Yep, I think I'll put Hansel in the pie. I've got the dough all rolled out here, so as soon as the oven is hot, I'll bake my crust."
And she made Gretel run back and forth from the stove to the wood pile till the fire under the oven was roaring. Listen to that fire. When the oven was practically red hot, the witch said to Gretel,
Crawl in the oven there, my girl, and see if it's hot enough for pie crust.
Well, anyone could see the oven was hot without crawling into it. And Gretel quickly understood that the witch was planning to push her in and bake her, so she could have the fun of eating both children at once. Now, I told you Hansel was smart, but he didn't have all the brains in the family, not by a long shot. So when the witch asked Gretel to stick her head in the oven, she pretended not to understand. I'm sorry. What is it you want me to do? She asked.
Crawl in the oven, you stupid girl.
But how? Asked Gretel.
Like this, you ninny,
said the witch. And she crawled up and put her head in the oven. And that's where she made her big mistake. Because the minute her head was in, Gretel gave her a push that shoved her the rest of the way, then slammed the iron door and bolted it.
Oh!
How the old witch howled. But Gretel ran away and let her burn to ashes. Well, you can imagine how glad Hansel was when Gretel came and let him out of the cage. And when she told him how she'd taken care of the witch, Hansel felt as proud as if he'd done it himself. In fact, he said so. I couldn't have done any better myself, sis, he said, which made Gretel very happy. Witches, by the way, were considered such a pest that if you were lucky enough to kill one, you were entitled to grab anything you found lying around her house. So when Hansel and Gretel found a huge pile of precious stones hidden in the kitchen cupboard, Hansel filled his pockets and Gretel filled her apron, and it was all perfectly right and proper. If we could only find our way home now, how happy we would be, the children thought. Just then they heard the sound of wings, and when they looked up, there was the beautiful white bird circling above their heads and singing. And when he flew slowly off, they knew he must be taking them where they wanted to go. Sure enough, the white bird took them straight home. And I wish you could have seen the look on their father's face when they walked in the door. He hadn't had a happy moment since the day he'd left the children in the forest. And here they were, safe and sound. Also, his wife had fallen down a well and broken her neck the week before, so all his troubles were over. They sold the precious stones to a king who lived in the neighborhood, and used the money to build a modest little house in which they lived happily forever after.
Now, I really hope you enjoyed the special story I played for you. That was a well-known story of Hansel and Gretel, recorded by Harold Perry, who played Throckmorton P. Gildersleeve in the radio series The Great Gildersleeve. Perry's collective stories were known as Gildersleeve Stories for Children, which Perry recorded for Capitol Records between 1946 and 1947 under the name Gildy. The story you heard today was recorded in 1946 and was originally released on a 78 RPM record. These stories were never aired as part of an old-time radio series, but they're relevant to this program because Perry recorded these stories using his radio character's persona. I hope you enjoyed the two other stories I featured today as well, both of which are featured for the first time on Old Part of Radio. Before I say goodbye for the week, let me pass along my contact information. You may write me at Old Part of Radio, 2080 15th Avenue, Prince George, BC, Canada, Victor 2 Mike, 1 Tango 1. You may also email me at Corey, C-O-R-E-Y, at CFASFM.com. From the CFAS studios in Prince George, I'm Corey Walker. Have a great week. Thank you.